All right, we will call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Bruce.
Present.
Councilmember Biggs.
Present.
Councilmember Laraway.
Present.
Council President McPherson.
Here.
Mayor Steer.
And I'm here. If you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item is the consent agenda. Is there anything you want pulled for discussion or motions otherwise?
I would move we approve the consent agenda as published.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs?
Aye.
Councilmember Laraway?
Aye.
Council President McPherson?
Aye.
And that motion carries. That takes us to business item 7A. Consideration to approve resolution R47, 2023. And so this has to do with the exercise of the city's right to eminent domain to obtain easements for the construction and maintenance of a sewer trunk line. This is the one we tabled from July 5th. Questions, comments? We do have some, as you were provided, copies of the alternative route, which was one thing that council had asked for. And I think we're going to put them up on the screen. Yeah, so the one that's up there now is the summary. The top two lines are the ones we're actually talking about tonight, the deal with phase one. And then as you can see, there's a difference of $5,836,000 there. And so I'll just note one thing that we've done through this entire process. We've tried to be as less impactful as possible on that forum and not interrupt their operations any more or any longer than we have to. And as this process has gone through, when the plant was built, a lot of temporary lift stations have been built by developers, and they are exactly that, temporary lift stations. And when this trunk line is put into service, then we can start taking some of those offline and get rid of some of those lift stations. That actually is a savings for users and also something that needs to be done because those are actually temporary. So
could you clarify that? Are we talking about the Mason Creek trunk line, or are we talking about the alternative trunk line, or are we talking about these phases?
I'm just talking about the reason for putting in the Mason Creek line. Okay.
I ask the engineers.
Yeah, who do you want to?
Paul. Being in the two choices, other than financial, does the location of the alternative route, is that any benefit for future growth to the north? Or are we pending this Mason Creek litigation on sewage that is already to the south.
Councilman Lowry, this is Paul, city engineer, and I'm here a lot, 450, whatever it is, 751 North 4th. Okay, so that alternate route that goes up and up to South Linder and across West Lake Hazel and back down to South 10 Mile into the plant, it will be a gravity of pressurized main. So it will not service anything to the north of it. You really can't, well, I guess you can, but you have to inject it at a higher pressure than the pressure that's inside the pipe.
So typically, isn't everything to the north geographically higher? Wouldn't it gravitate down?
Yes, and they already have some pipelines coming down from Gran Prado and Cazador, I believe it is. Or, yeah, it's a C1 anyway.
So the Mason Creek would not service to any different to the north?
No.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to ask, Phase 1 and Phase 1A, those are the only two options. There is no other option we could possibly entertain, like the obviously the temporary lift stations. I don't know what the cost of those are. Replacing them, is there anything else? There's no other way?
Councilman Biggs, I believe you can probably find another route, but it won't be the gravity route, and you will be pumping. So these two are the best ones we identified. We'd be happy to look at more if that's the council's decision. But these are the two best ones we could identify in the work we've done so far. Part of the problem is that we're running out of space in some of these right-of-ways to put more pipes. And that's also going to be a problem for the one, if you want to do the Mason Creek pressure reroute. That's three pipes. There's two 18s and a 12, and that's an estimate of what we'll need. So there's going to be hard to fit all that in the right-of-way, and there are other competing utilities in that space. So it's not going to be a particularly slam-dunk easy idea to fulfill.
Yeah, that's why I think, you know, we asked for the options, you know, last week. That's because we wanted to have, you know, look at all them costs, and then, you know, we lean on the experts, obviously, for the technical questions and stuff like that, but it just seems like one option, that's an expensive option. Because I'm not exactly a fan of eminent domain. I don't think anybody here is.
No.
I don't know. I feel like we should, if there are any other possible options with costs associated, it'd be nice to entertain that, I guess.
Well, I mean, you could probably find all kinds of different routes to take things, but I think they've identified what they thought to be the most reasonable alternative route. And, you know, obviously every time you do one of those, we have to run that through an engineering firm to come up with those cost estimates. And it gets pretty spendy every time we want to do that, so. I'm comfortable with the fact that they came up with the best alternative route that they could find based on what we're trying to accomplish.
So basically, these are the two most cost-effective choices that we have.
In my opinion, yes.
And for a point of clarification, Mr. Biggs, the land that we would have to cross to take another route would belong to the same people.
May I ask another question?
Yes.
Paul, being that, and I talked to the man about this prior, it seems that the Mason Creek line is altered from what we originally had discussed about it following Mason Creek all the way around. Now, and I understand it's bordering other property now other than with Durant. Now, have the Durants been brought into this process to where they know we're not cutting through their property as much as we were?
Councilman Narroway, The only thing that changed was that last leg where the arrow goes to Mason Creek Phase 1 design. It's back to the plant, and we did straighten that out rather than follow the contour of the creek. And that was because we have a 36-inch diameter pipe, and it was felt unreasonable to make that many turns in that pipe. And we felt that this would actually protect the Durant property better if we just did a straight line. The pipe would be underground, and we'll only have about 2 manholes in that area, which we will also bury about 4 feet under the surface, which they farm. So if we felt like this would be the least trouble for them, and it would be a short period on that.
And they're aware of that change?
I don't know that they are or not. I think we gave this set of plans to them during the negotiations.
Yeah. So Mark Bybee, city attorney, just to help out a little on that. Before we got to this point, the city did engage a company, a service that provides for negotiation of rights of way in these types of circumstances. And the negotiations were based on the route that's depicted here. It's nothing's changed. Like, what was presented to the property owners is what's before you. Because if we were to have those negotiations on one route through their property and then change, we would need to reapproach them. And so this is what was presented to the landowner. The alternate route that red dashed line, that wasn't part of it because that's not through the portion that we're talking about in this resolution. The resolution would be like the last bit of that blue line to get to the plant.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Paul, you said that the manholes were buried. It's that the cleanouts that are every 400 feet, those will actually be buried?
Yes, but we will stretch those out a little further.
Oh, okay.
I believe you look at the plan set that we gave to everybody that it would, I think we're going like 600 or 800 feet even.
Okay. I guess my only concern is one of those is going to land right where the pivot runs over it or something, but if they're buried, then that's not an issue.
So we looked at several alternatives on how to do that, and we talked to a fellow who had worked at the city of Boise, and they buried them without any troubles. And you know, we asked the questions of if gas would build up in there, if there would be any problems, and they hadn't ever had any problems with it. So we felt like we were safe to continue in this way.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Chris, go ahead.
Paul, what's the difference in timeline if we go with the second option? Do you have an idea of what it would take as far as timeline?
That's an unknown, and the reason it's unknown, I don't know how long it's going to take to do the legal part for the one. But it took us about 18 months to get all the approvals we needed to do the 10-mile Danskin to the plant, force main. So we had to work with ACHD and work out how do we get in there. So I would expect there would be similar timeline for this other one.
Thank you.
Yes,
I don't know who to ask this question to, but I'm just going to throw it out there and ask for input. Paul, being that this line is going to possibly go through the Mason property, does that add to the value of their property for the future, being that the line's already there?
The Durant property?
Right. Yeah. Mayor and Council, I believe that would be a speculation on my part, but I would think that if you had access to a sewer that you didn't have to build, you would be improving your property.
Okay. That way, just thought off the top of my head. Thank you.
Paul, I wanted to ask kind of the same question that Councilman Laraway had earlier about the north. What about the west? Development to the west. If the alternate route was used, is there future development to the west that would take advantage of that?
West being west of 10 miles?
West of 10 miles.
We already have that covered. We have
so even further west. I mean, it's the plant would.
The 2017 sewer master plan has a plan for that. And when we put the Danskin line in, we also opened up a 12-inch, so that a 12-inch line, the one that we essentially abandoned, is going to be used by 3 subdivisions over there already. So that's already coming back. So we already have that going to the west covered. And there is a, in the master plan, there is a plan for a regional lift station at over by McDermott, not quite McDermott, Black Cat.
Okay.
Would I guess following the same, Paul, probably in the same question, does that, what about affecting anything towards up Lake Hazel, towards Lake Hazel and 10 Mile and possibly beyond where the topographical cutoff is?
They'll have to pump it back to us.
But would it be through a different line?
For right now, I think the 12-inch would handle a great deal of that.
Okay.
And at some point, they'd probably have to make it bigger.
Okay, thank you.
And that's also being looked at in our current sewer master plan that they're studying, which should be ready in another 6 months. It takes a long time to do them.
And then again, as Paul had previously mentioned, this is a, the alternative route would be a pressurized system, so it's not easy to pump anything else into that. You'd have to come back to wherever the lift station is to get to that, to pump that back in, which would bring you a long ways around. So I don't think there's going to be an effective way to pump anything else into that.
It won't be easy anyway, and you would be, we had that issue before where Crimson Lift Station and Dan Skin were hooked together, and they fought against each other. So it, we gained quite a bit of capacity by separating them. So we prefer to keep these separate.
So I have another question.
Okay.
Mark, Paul. Plan A being the Mason Creek Junction. This figure that they have, that's not including court costs and legal fees or anything like that, right? Or any kind of money that we have to pay the Durants if we do win.
Correct. I don't believe there's any in here. I don't think there's anything that said anything about land, to obtain land. That's going to be an outside negotiation.
Mark Bybee, city attorney. Are you talking about the number, the 32,000 that's stated in the resolution? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm just referring to the phase
one. He's just looking at the summary.
Oh, the summary. Presented. Yeah, no, that doesn't address that at all. I thought you were talking about, so paragraph 1.11 from the resolution talks about the appraised value that for the easement requirements where the city's attempting to obtain through this, and it's that was the appraised value for the easement requirements. It wasn't getting into legal costs and those kinds of things. That's, if there's going to be negotiations about that, that'd be unfortunately in the process of eminent domain. It was really an attempted negotiation about the appraisal and whether they wanted to offer a competing appraisal, which they were not interested in.
They may ask, where'd that appraisal come from?
So the negotiator that we hired, so it was Larry Rinkover, if I recall right, his company's negotiation services. He actually hired a professional appraiser that he uses in these, specifically these circumstances. His name's evading me right now. I don't know if Paul or... And so it sounds like Morgan has it, but this is... These are the kinds of appraisals he does. It's associated with these types of acquisitions for rights of way. I think he does quite a few for like ACHD projects when they're acquiring rights of way for roadways and such. And so, we went to people who dealt in this arena. So we didn't just get an appraiser from somebody that does your standard home appraisal. This was somebody that deals in this arena.
It seemed kind of low. That's why I was kind of wondering.
Well, and part of it is because we're only obtaining easement rights. We won't have exclusive rights to these lands. The easements, there's two different ones we're attempting to acquire. One would be a permanent easement about 30 feet wide along that blue pathway that goes across their property. Not about 30 feet wide. It would be 30 feet wide. That would be a permanent easement for the purpose of construction and also maintenance of the line. And so if we're not there, and it basically permit the city to have access to the lands to conduct maintenance and construction. If we're not doing maintenance, we're not there doing anything. It's just a buried line occupying space below the surface. And so they're primarily the land would be undisturbed, like other than during the construction period or during maintenance period. There's another separate easement 20 feet wide that would be temporary and be a temporary construction easement that's immediately just run parallel with the permanent one. And it's just the reason for that is during the course of construction, the installation, we anticipate we will need more room just for the project to complete it. Once the installation is done, that temporary easement would terminate. And so the value of a temporary easement is fairly limited because it's for a period of, you know, time, and it's not permanent. It's not something we could continue to use that 20 feet after the construction is done. It'd be for.
Yeah, compared to what they originally wanted, it seems there's going to be quite a bit of difference.
Yeah, and it's because they still have, and we will have the right to enter the land to construct, install, and then that 30 feet, we'll have the right to enter it to maintain the system after it's in there. And so it's not like we have something on the surface occupying the surface. They're, other than the time during construction or during maintenance, their farming operations will be generally uninterrupted. During construction, depending on when that's timed, you know, if it's done during winter months where they're, I'm not a farmer, so I don't want to get too out of hand, but the impact would be less, I'll say that. I can't say it wouldn't be anything, but it would be less during, you know, when they're not actually producing a crop.
And what is the litigation time frame? A year, 6 months?
Yeah, can you walk us through the process, what happens when we exercise eminent domain?
So once if you approve this resolution of necessity, you're not exercising eminent domain tonight. You're just authorizing city staff to pursue a complaint. So pursuing a complaint is filing a complaint in court to initiate a lawsuit. And after we initiate the lawsuit, they'll have 21 days to answer the complaint. And then after that, how it can play out varies, and so it's hard to give a strict deadline. And I'd like to think we could have this done within a year or less than a year, but litigation is always variable, and it just kind of depends on what each party's position is and the motions and strategies they employ during litigation. And so I'm reluctant to give very much of a precise deadline with those kinds of uncertainties. I know that there's various motions we would intend to pursue, but those would be strategic, and I don't know that I necessarily want to get into those kinds of things in this setting.
As you, the city attorney, are you the one that will be doing it, or will it go to somebody else in your office, or is it contracted out?
It'll be our office that's pursuing it. Myself, Bill Guigre will certainly be helping, but you'll see a couple different attorneys. For example, Brian O'Bannon from my office has assisted with preparing the resolution you're looking at, preparing a draft complaint, which is just in progress. It's not done yet. I was reviewing it today, but it needs some work. But yeah, you'll probably see a few different people, but primarily the faces you're used to seeing, me and Bill Guigre.
Thank you very much.
And then as part of this action tonight, we need to include the construction drawings, which are Exhibit A in your information.
May I have one more question?
Sure.
Mark, if we have, say at any time after this project's complete and it fails in any manner, are we responsible for cleaning that up, or and say it does damage a crop that that's down the road, do we still foot that bill?
Are you talking about if our sewer system fails?
Right, if they have something, you know.
It's our system, so yeah, we're going to be responsible for failures of our system. That's, yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask, what's the cost of the temporary lift stations that we currently have that's the bulk of the work now?
I don't know that we really have costs on those. Those are developers are required to put those in. I don't know. I mean, maybe you'd see costs on them. I don't know.
We, Councilman Biggs, we did actually do some reimbursement on Spring Hill Lift Station.
Okay.
And we paid for quite a bit of it because we are, the previous people asked for more capacity. I don't remember what the reimbursement was, but we paid our proportional share. So there is some cost there. It roughly costs, depending on the lift station, about $6,000 a month to give it energy. Electricity is about $6,000 a month for each lift station, or thereabouts.
And how many total lift stations are right now doing the work?
I think about four.
So $24,000 a month, roughly. That's not including maintenance and.
That's just for electricity. That's probably a reasonable number. Jared might have a better feel for that than I do.
So, Councilmember Biggs, so one of the biggest issues aside from strictly electricity that we find is that pumps wear out really fast. So what would have lasted 10 years is likely the last six or seven. Lots of these pumps are probably nearing end of life. For instance, some of the pumps that we replaced within the last year are costing $50,000 per pump. And so given that, it's really expensive to maintain those pumps.
Thank you. Okay. Anything further?
No, sir. Not for me.
And can I clarify what you said? This does not give, this does not push the button for eminent domain case. This is just giving these city employees and staff the right to move forward to start checking boxes. Is that right?
Mark Bybee, city attorney. If I heard, I think I heard you right. If you enter this resolution of necessity, you would be authorizing city staff to file the eminent domain complaint. So that would be initiating an eminent domain lawsuit.
Thank you.
So we'd be entering litigation at that point.
And I have one more question. When was the last time that the city and the landowners came together to negotiate or speak?
Mark Bybee, city attorney. I don't have that file open in front of me. I recall it was sometime early May that Larry Rincover on behalf of the city last spoke to the Durant's attorney. Who had sent some letters and indicated that was where the correspondence was supposed to go. And so it was sometime early May of this year is my recollection without having that right in front of me right now.
Thanks. One more?
Sure.
Paul, the difference in cost, if I can find it, the difference in cost, $5 million, I guess what I'm after is if the Mason Creek is 7.blank million and the alternate route is 13 million, does the city ever recoup any of that money depending on which way we go? I mean, they got hookup fees that are going to apply everywhere, but we're talking $5 million. Does the city ever recoup that in hookup fees if we go to the alternate route?
Jared probably is the better one to speak to that, except for that I think the answer is yes, but it would take twice as long because you'd be paying back twice as much.
So Councilman Laraway, and Paul could perhaps clarify this. So if it doesn't increase the number of homes or EDUs that could connect to the system, it wouldn't necessarily be advantageous from a financial standpoint to choose an alternate route because you're just increasing your expenses and your revenue would stay the same through the connection fee. So did that answer your question?
Yes and no, but I guess I look at it logically going, no matter who builds to the north, they're all going to have to pay hookup fees. So it wouldn't matter if it was an alternate route or a Mason Creek route. There's still all that whole area is still going to have to hook into that pipe.
Correct. Yeah. So, right. So, the revenue from the connection fees would stay the same. However, the expenses would increase dramatically
which would have to be factored into a user fee later. So in essence, what you're saying is that additional cost would get factored into everyone's utility bill later, because you have to be able to recapture that depreciation, that the depreciation of that infrastructure, because it has a limited life.
So I hear what you're saying is it would cost the developers more to hook up.
No, so it would cost the developers the same amount to hook up. The issue is that because of that additional cost, that additional $6 million in cost, you would have to pass that cost on to everybody in the city as a user, increase to the user fee. Okay. So does that make sense?
Yes, that cleared it up. Thank you. This is a tough one.
Well, I think, you know, nobody likes eminent domain, and we've not wanted to ever do that, and it's actually kind of my fault that this has taken this long, because I've been hesitant to move forward with that, but we really have no other option in this case, and again, I'm comfortable with the fact that staff has worked on this to make it as least impactful on that farming operation as is possible. I don't think Greg probably has any plows that go 4 feet in the ground that would ever impact a manhole, so.
I hope not.
We're trying really hard to not have an impact on that. The plant was built where it was built because of that geographical line, and why the city didn't obtain those rights of ways when they purchased the property to build the plant from the grants, I don't know. But I don't think anyone is naive enough to know that that didn't have to occur in order for that plant to be built there to be efficient. So we've kind of come to that here today, and we've done everything we can to avoid it, as far as I can tell, and it's where we are. So,
well, and the alternate route just really doesn't work, because if you have catastrophic failure at that lift station, then now what?
Right.
You know, that's the worst thing there. If you do the Spring Hill loop around, you know, if that system there has a problem, the whole city's backed up then, the way this is designed. That trunk line has to be in. And given that, like you said, that they can bury those covers, that kind of changes the game on affecting their day-to-day operations there.
So I don't have the background that some of y'all do with this. So would it be worth tabling this and having one last chance, one last meeting with them? Or we already exercised one last meeting already so many times in the past, I don't know. Saying, you know, there's a great chance we're going to be going to court here unless we can come to an agreement at the, you know, one last.
Well, I think we got to that point, and we went to a third party to try to negotiate that too, because it was, we were going nowhere with it, and that's kind of why we started the process through a third-party negotiator, hoping that we could come to an agreement through that before having to come to this.
I guess that didn't
work. So.
Fair enough. I guess this is they would have the knowledge that this is going to cost them a lot of money too, to. You know, for the legal, whatever legal implications there are to this, fighting it or whatever comes. So that's just why I was curious.
I wanted
to ask that question.
Yeah. And I think, it's obvious that they're opposed to this, or we wouldn't be to this point here. So I think dragging it out any further wouldn't bear any kind of fruit.
Okay.
Mark?
Mark Bybee, city attorney. Just a little context on that, Councilman Biggs, is that we make that proposal and offer to them, a packet goes out to them explaining, you know, what we're doing, what the offer is, what lands are impacted. And so I wasn't the one individually involved, obviously had that third party doing it, but he communicated back to me and recommended this course of action after their final meeting. Just his opinion was that basically it didn't appear we were going to come to a negotiated resolution with the landowners, and so he recommended this course of action at the end of the process.
And he expressed this to the, I guess, the landowner, that this is the route that I'm recommending that we're taking?
That was part of the packet. He didn't make a recommendation. Or when you say, sorry, route, I thought geographic route.
No. Yeah, the next steps.
I wasn't in the meeting, so I don't want to say exactly what he said. But part of the packet that we send is a notification of rights that indicates, you know, we need to make an offer to them. And if there's not a resolution, that we have the ability to pursue eminent domain. And so there's this notification that they have to receive by statute that's part of the packet that we send to them, and they did get that notification.
Thank you.
I have a council question for you. Would something like this be better in an open public meeting rather than a resolution? I mean, shouldn't the public have some taste in this? Because we're talking quite a bit of money.
I guess better is a matter of opinion on there.
I'm sure it works.
I'll answer that you're not, for, to adopt this resolution, you're not required to have a public hearing. And so from a legal perspective, what you're doing is this is an appropriate way to adopt this resolution. The better is kind of getting to a qualitative thing that I think gets outside of
I'm just listening
legal
to
opinion.
You.
Yeah.
Your advice.
I think you're going to get more information. I don't know if you do that, more opinions. I don't know if that's necessarily better. I think that's your determination, whether that's better.
Okay. Thank you.
I mean, you've got a big, I don't know, the scales of justice here. You've got big, bad government, going to flex its muscles. Other side, $5 million to the taxpayer, right?
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, I knew where you're going with that. So I'm thinking the same thing too. What does the public think about this? You know, because either way you go, it's not going to be popular. I have a funny feeling. If you're saying, well, we're saving the taxpayer $5 million, but you're taking someone's property, no matter what the circumstances are.
But we're not taking it.
Right, or you're trying to.
We're mulling.
You're trying to get underneath and put a, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the only part that gives me a little frustration, that we're not taking his property.
Right. But we are. But,
well, 6 feet under we
yeah.
are.
Well, and the ability to drive on it when we deem it necessary.
Or if there's a disaster, having to go clean it up and potentially clean up other things.
Well, this is where the mayor gets the big bucks.
Can I ask a question for Paul?
Yeah.
Paul, hypothetically, this goes through. Depending on 1 year's crop to the next, you've basically got a 5-month window-ish to put in the chunk through Durant's. And, of course, it's the winter months, and we all know there's those things in the ground besides our pipes called rocks. We feasibly think we can do the 1,900-ish feet through their thing in 4 or 5 months?
I think we can. Yes, there's nothing else out there. And also, we would work very diligently to make sure we could miss the crop rotation as much as possible. And we would make that part of the contract documents.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor.
Well, it's not a public hearing. I mean, if you're just wanting to tell us that you object to that, I think that's obvious by the fact that we are where we are. Yeah, we don't. I mean, I don't know how to deal with what it is you want to do here, but if we do go to eminent domain litigation, I think discussions like this are problematic, and that because it's not a public hearing. I think we've had discussions with them. Mark?
And I guess, Mark Bivey, city attorney, I believe this is, are you Mr. Barker? Is that correct? Okay, so this Mr. Barker is legal counsel for the Durants. I know he's the individual who engaged with Larry Rinkover to some degree, and that was where we had formed the opinion, or Larry formed the opinion that it didn't appear after their last meeting that negotiations would be successful and recommended this course of action. I don't know if Mr. Barker's hoping to reopen that, but ultimately, I guess if you want to table it and say reopen negotiations, I don't know if that's what's being proposed, but the last we had from our contracted third-party negotiator was to proceed with in this manner because those negotiations were unsuccessful.
So is that what you're wanting to do, is renegotiate?
I will say that I don't know that
we had any. Mayor, can we ask him to get on the mic?
Yeah, you have to come up with the mic. And state your name and address for the record.
Thank you. Albert Barker, 101 South Capitol Boulevard, Boise, Idaho, representative of the Durant family. The question that was asked was, are they willing to renegotiate or reopen negotiations? And I, from my perspective, what we got was a take it or leave it offer, unless you come up with and do all your own investigation, all your own, hire your own experts, come up with another number, this is all we're willing to give. And we never got any information about alternative routes, why it has to cut diagonally through the middle of their property, why can't it go around the edges. None of that information was ever provided. Yeah, if there's an interest in talking about other options than the one that was given to us, then I think there's interest in talking. If it is take this, we're going to do it, and this is how it's going to be, then I don't think there's interest in talking. So if that helps answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
I guess that question that was posed to you earlier about were they involved in of this update, you said yes.
In this route? This is the route, the blue route that I showed you, that is what they received.
And the alternate?
The alternate route, the one going through, was not, and that's a new alternate route that was recently developed, but it was not presented to them because it doesn't go through their land, and it wasn't.
Okay.
This isn't, that alternate route isn't on the table as far as what the resolution would authorize, okay. And it doesn't go through the lands under in
thank
this
you for clarifying
question.
Yeah, and I don't, we wouldn't negotiate with the alternate route because it's really not feasible. That the alternate route came from your asking for what would it cost for an alternate route, so that's where that came from.
And I will say, as far as the offer was made, and I know that a counter offer was requested, but the Durants declined to provide an alternate or a counter proposal, and that's where things died.
Council President, would it be appropriate to table this so the two parties could get together and fix this before we make a vote?
Well, that, or I think the other option would be to go ahead and go with this and then direct them to have another conversation. And if that is fruitful, then we can go that route. And if not, we can continue on here. I think dragging this out is just going to make it more uncomfortable for everybody. So that's my opinion, but
I would agree.
So I think we can direct staff. I think anytime there's any kind of a suit like that, I think there's some discussions on
it. It'd be very unusual for a lawsuit to never have a discussion of resolution. That's pretty common, but I guess the question that's being raised here is, do we feel like there's a reason before authorizing this resolution that authorizes a lawsuit to have any additional conversations? I think that seems to be the point that we're at.
Yeah, and I believe him here making his statement says exactly that.
I'm hearing his perspective on it, yes. And so if you feel like with what you're hearing, I'm hearing it too, then that's your decision whether you want me or Mr. Rinkover to engage again at this point or not.
Okay. Going back to our one last chance, I would be in favor of tabling and want just one meeting. That's what it takes. Coming back to this.
Well, and I guess also like Mark had said, we made there was an offer made and asked for a counter offer, and then there was no counter offer. So I don't know where we're going to get if we keep dragging it out. Other than more discomfort, and we have to come back up here again. I don't like eminent domain. We've been trying very hard to push this off as long as we can so that we didn't have to get to this. This has been going on for a long time. So,
and that's where I would say I totally understand and agree. It's just one more meeting. I don't know.
I'm of the opinion of the mayor, direct staff to proceed, but also direct them to communicate with Mr. Barker, their negotiator, Durant's, whoever they have to. And like he said, if that doesn't prove satisfying, then we already have the ball in motion. The ball's in motion and they decide, hey, let's work this out. We can always pick the ball up and stop.
And that's what they'll do. They'll negotiate or they'll have discussions. And if they resolve this before it has to come to this, then that's where they get. I think that's the way most of those work anyway, so.
That's where I'm at. Mr. Bruce, something's on your mind. What are you thinking?
I can understand both options, right? But my thought is this trunk line is for what people that are currently using the system, or is it just to allow more people to develop? Right? These people have had their land. They've done nothing wrong but farm it, use it. And now us as a city government are like, hey, you made a – and it's on the city, right, previous administrations for not getting it in writing what we decided to do.
And them too. But it's a two-sided thing. Yeah. That's the problem.
And so, you know, from my point of view, I don't think it's – I'm not a fan of using any type of government body to take land from someone. But, I mean, I could argue each direction. And when we say, hey, we sent them an offer and they didn't send it back, is there any validity to his statement where he said they want us to prepare – you know, an offer or engineering designs or things like that, or are you just expecting a number back?
I think what's getting lost in here, Mark Bybee, city attorney, what's getting lost in this conversation a little bit, our offer was a proposal for the purchase of the easement rights. It's not about the entire scope of the cost of the design. It's like these are the rights we are attempting to acquire to this chunk of land, and so it's an offer for to purchase rights to real property, not an offer about the whole scope of the sewer project.
So they could have just shot back a number and that would have been an offer?
If they proposed a different offer to purchase those rights, that would have been a counter offer to what we proposed to them.
And that can all still happen,
right,
if we do this. And again, we're doing something that yeah. still allows them use of their land. I mean, we're not, it's not like we're shutting them down or trying to run farmers out of business or any of that kind of stuff. That's certainly not what's happening here.
I'm from the government and I'm here to help. That's what it sounds like.
Well, no, the
we're cleaning.
There was a $30 million investment in a wastewater treatment plant. We need to be able to use it.
Right.
We're cleaning up the mess from a previous.
None of us had anything to do with that in 2007 and 8. Yeah. But we're left to pick up the pieces. And
3 mayors ago.
Yeah.
I'll entertain a motion if someone's got one.
Okay. This is probably a question for Mark Bybee. The motion needs to state the approval of a resolution for phase one or... Okay. 47.
Approval of resolution 47-2023, including the sewer phase one plan.
Okay. Oh, because that was.
Plan, phase one construction plan attached as Exhibit A.
Okay. With great hesitation, I would move we approve resolution R47-2023 and add Exhibit A to the motion to include phase one of the Linder Road across Durant to Northwest Water Treatment Plant and direct staff to collaborate with the negotiator, Mr. Barker, and or the Big D family in a one last ditch effort attempt for negotiations. Did I forget anything?
Sorry. Mark Bybee, city attorney. Did you say Big B family?
Big D family.
Oh, Big D. Okay. I was not sure. That was a new name, so I was trying to clarify.
Dry throat.
All right. Do we have a second?
We don't second it. What's our...
We don't second it. We have to make another motion.
Yeah. What are you guys feeling? What?
I want one more meeting. I want to table it one more meeting.
I'd like...
If we're taking Mr. Barker at his word, I'd like one more meeting to talk to Mr. Barker before we do this.
I look at it like this. If we give the two opponents, if you will, the last chip's chance to figure this out, and if they don't, we come back in 2 weeks, we get it done.
Right.
But I'd rather have that option taken care of civilly rather than us looking like a bunch of land grabbers. Personal opinion.
And will that go to, does that then, Mark, go back to Mr. Winover, or how Mark. Does that work now then that we're at this point of the process?
Mark Bybee, city attorney. I will contact him if we're going to go to that, because part of it is the reason we use a third party is if we enter litigation for eminent domain, they may end up being a witness, and it would be an issue as to I can't be a witness in the same litigation that I'm acting right. as an attorney to. So that's part of why we use a third party negotiator. So I'll coordinate with Mr. Rinkover about that and what came up in this meeting. If you guys direct for further negotiations.
Yeah, if this attorney hadn't showed up, I'd have been okay with this, but we allowed him to speak.
They haven't been there before, though. I mean, we made an offer and asked for a return offer, and they didn't do it. And, I mean, I don't know. But whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I agree. I won't be seconding that. I'd give them one last chance.
Well, until next meeting.
Yeah, and then it's...
Then we, if nothing's worked out, we push the button and we move on.
Okay, that motion dies due to lack of a second. Do we have a alternate motion?
Mark Bivey, city attorney. Just if this is going to be tabled, aligning schedules in 2 weeks can be a challenge sometimes, also with the deadline for getting things on the agenda being the Thursday before the meeting. It puts it down to about a week and a half. So if we're tabling it to a different date, I just would recommend you keep those factors in mind as to what date it is.
To a date certain, you mean?
Yeah, if we move it to a date certain, I'm just, if it's the next meeting, that's 2 weeks away with the deadline for getting things on the agenda the Thursday before. So okay. Really, we would have like a week and a half to have those conversations. And it's just, especially this time of year, aligning that people's calendars in that time frame.
Well, I think they've already said the grants are out of town anyway.
So. Yeah, their grants are out. I don't know where Mr. Rinko is.
So probably ought to go a month from now, so, then, if you're going to do
so
that.
So 15th.
I'll make a motion that we table resolution R47-2023 and direct staff, city attorney, to speak with the property owner's attorney and up until August 15th.
Second.
Okay, have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Item B, consideration to approve tentative budget, Jared Empey.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Jared Empey, City Treasurer. So before you have the tentative budget. So if you recall, back in June, we had our original budget workshop in which we discussed various items on the budget, rationales for why the numbers were the way they were, and different projects that we had scheduled. The numbers that you have before you tonight are what we call the tentative budget. Essentially, that means that that's the last time that they will change from a city standpoint before the budget hearing, which will occur next month, which will be at the August 15th meeting. So the only thing that changed from the last meeting were some very minor payroll changes, which are very common. Then there was a small change in the sales tax distribution from 5% to 6% inflation adjusted, given that inflation does not seem to be decreasing much. And it seems that because of additional capacity along the 10-mile, due to the 10-mile force main, it seems that we may have additional population growth, which will change that number slightly. So from that standpoint, we raised the number from 5% to 6% growth. And another item was under the east and west water funds and sewer funds, we put in a budget to purchase new computers and furniture for staff so that we could furnish the office that will be provided for us out in East Cuna. So other than that, there are no changes from our prior meeting, and I would sit for any questions that you may have.
Okay, questions for Jared.
So Jared, I'd just like to ask, since this is my first budget review, is this all, I guess the department heads all get together and bring their budgets forward and get with you to present this? Or is there a committee or anything like that that reviews all this and I guess validates when, you know, last year's sewer expenditures compared to the budget last year and then the things that we expect coming up, that sort of thing? Is it pretty much left to the department heads or?
So Councilman Biggs, to answer your question, it really depends on the involvement that a department head may have. For some departments, budgeting may not be their strong point. Some department heads are hired not for their fiscal or accounting acuity. They're hired to hire good people, or they're hired to manage good people. And so it just depends on the department. Some department heads are very involved with their budget and have their budget down to a T, and some are a little more hands-off, but that's to be expected, just depending on the personality of the director. But to answer your question more specifically, generally the process goes that depending on the fund, I handle the operations and maintenance section and try to use my best crystal ball to see kind of where things are landing, and I use historical information to be able to kind of determine where things land. Then I reach out to each department for the capital projects that need to happen within the next year, and I make a list, and there's some back and forth on those lists as to what we can or can't afford. And after those kind of back and forth discussions go, then we land on an exact number. But the goal is to always be fiscally responsible. And for certain funds, that looks different ways. So, for instance, with the general fund, we always try to be cash positive at the end of the day. Whereas the enterprise funds, we want to make sure that the revenue is greater than the expenses, which is two different things. So, for instance, on a cash basis, you just want to make sure that your revenue, your cash in is greater than your cash out. However, for enterprise funds, which is water, sewer, irrigation, the goal isn't necessarily to make sure that cash is higher in than out. It's to make sure that revenue is higher than your expenses. And the biggest expenditure we have is depreciation, by far. So that's evaluated at the back end, more at the audit time frame. And the best way to do that is to make sure that we have a steady revenue stream. So that's how that's mainly evaluated. And that depreciation number is monitored pretty closely to making sure that we're always giving ourselves a lot of room on that, especially given that inflation makes depreciation that much more important. For instance, accounting regulations say that we're supposed to record things at historical cost, but what may have cost, you know, $100,000 or $1 million today, when it has to be replaced in 30 years, it's not going to cost that same number. It will probably be three or four times that. So the biggest consideration is making sure that we have steady revenue in those enterprise funds.
And on the depreciation side, specifically, what are you talking about, like motor vehicles depreciate or
so the
land
big,
or?
So land on accounting doesn't depreciate because no matter what, dirt will always exist. Yes, we look at each vehicle independently and make sure that our fleet is not getting too aged. However, the biggest cost that we have is the infrastructure costs. So, for instance, the North Wastewater Treatment Plant, which cost $30 million at its inception, we want to make sure that we look at each fund to make sure that we're adequately creating a reserve fund to be able to keep that fund operating at the same level that it was installed at, to make sure that we're not carrying this, carrying a large deferred maintenance cost that would later have to be recouped by probably some sort of a sewer bond. So.
And then my last question would be, I just remember several, I guess, items we had to dip into the contingency funds for. And so those are other things that the quality control check of the budget as far as when you're saying we don't have necessarily budget experts, where that all comes to, because you can't be expected to know all of that stuff.
Right. And so contingency funds our contingency requests are definitely taken on a case-by-case basis. And so the way it should work is if a department head needs to make a request, that department head will usually approach me and ask, you know, if something makes sense or if that's something that we can approve. And then we'll look at that on a case-by-case basis to make sure that we're being responsible.
You always do a great job educating me. Thank you.
Further?
I'm good.
I have one question. Jared, under, like, general government parks, clear down at the bottom, there's bank fees for, like, $2,000, and the back on the general government one, it was, like, $35,000. What are those? Because right. There's a lot of them and a lot of money at the end of the day.
Right. So to answer your question, Council President, so in short, bank costs have increased significantly over the past 3 years. COVID accelerated that because banks needed to recoup their costs due to the effects of COVID. Mm-hmm. That was one issue. Second issue is that we're a growing city. So even from the last 10 years or 5 years, the city has increased significantly, which has increased the number of transactions that we conduct on a monthly basis.
Gotcha.
And so especially with the fact that more people pay their utility bill online, which is a good thing, those costs. So, for instance, a few years ago, we only had, I believe, 7,000 or 8,000 users on our utility bill. Now we have essentially 10,000. So when first the banks raise their fee costs and the population is increasing, that's what causes that increase in fees.
Okay. Thank you.
I have one more question. Under public transportation, we used to have a budget line item for that, but we don't anymore. What was the public transportation that used to be?
Yeah, so Councilmember Biggs, so to answer your question, a few years ago, I believe that was essentially fiscal year 20. I believe what happened was we helped assist the senior center with their busing on a short-term basis. So, however, they've been able to find alternative means to finance that, and so we haven't had a need to help them out in that regard.
Thank you. Okay,
that's it. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Jared.
So we need a motion.
Of course we do. I would move we approve the tentative budget for 2024.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? And that motion carries.
Sounds like we need a free checking account.
Yeah. $67,000.
That's how they get you.
Yeah.
All right, consideration to approve ordinance 2023-16, a municipal annexation and zoning ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna, making certain findings and declaration of authority and annexing certain real properties to wit, Avalon Orchard Tracts, amend lots 5 and 6, block 2, lots 1 and 2, block 3, owned by Jody 3 LLC and lot 1 and 2, block 3, owned by Arthur Sidney and Laura Anderson, within an incorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the City of Cuna into the City of Cuna, Idaho, establishing the zoning classifications of said real properties and directing the city engineer and city clerk and providing an effective date.
No reason to drag it out.
No.
I would move we waive three readings of ordinance 2023-16.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I would move we approve ordinance 2023-16.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs?
Aye.
Councilmember Laraway?
Aye.
Council President McPherson?
Aye.
And the motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance 2023-17, a municipal annexation and zoning ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna, making certain findings and declaration of authority and annexing certain real property, to wit, 1922 West Ardell Road, owned by Enrique F. Contreras and Anna M. Paz, within the unincorporated area of Ada County, Idaho, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the City of Cuna, into the City of Cuna, Idaho, and establishing the zoning classification of said real property, and directing the city engineer and city clerk, and providing an effective date.
I would move we waive three readings of ordinance 2023-17.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I would move we approve ordinance 2023-17.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Bates?
Aye.
Councilmember Laraway?
Aye.
Council President McPherson?
Aye.
And that motion carries. And that is all we have on the agenda tonight. Police station is coming along nicely. Still on schedule with that, so it looks good. Once we get it scheduled, we'll have an open house, and y'all will be invited for that.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I have a real habit of waving all the CUNA cops when they drive by, but they've got a strange way of waving back.
With one slow finger. Down.
That's good.
Do we have any CUNA Day activities coming up? Since that'll be before. Well, actually, it'll be after our next meeting. We're on the 1st.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, there's this week is Freedom Fiesta, and the next weekend is the car show, the Lions Club, is that right? Yeah. And then the next week is CUNA Days. And we have cornhole tournament. And
yeah, mud, we run. Have mud run and cornhole.
And the mullet contest.
We aren't doing that one.
I am.
You're doing that
one. More of a skull.
Okay. That works. All right. Anything further?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for a good meeting.
Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.